Haley Salvian covers the Ottawa Senators for The Athletic, and she joins us now. Haley, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys?
Doing well, thank you very much. This is maybe the most upset I've seen some people at getting two top five picks potentially in the history of sports. The night didn't go maybe exactly how some Ottawa Senators fans would have hoped, but what is the overall sense that you've got from Senators fans now about 72 hours after the draft lottery?
Yeah, I mean, I think the initial reaction there was obviously, a bit of disappointment, maybe frustration. I think it's obviously disappointing that a placeholder team won that first overall pick. I mean, they certainly had the second best odds to win that spot collectively. I think it was about 24.9% chance that a placeholder team would win compared to the Senators' 25% chance. So it's not overly shocking, but I still think just watching that happen was quite shocking and disappointing for a lot of Senators fans, because that opens up a whole can of worms, right? Now you start thinking of the what ifs. What if the New York Islanders win that spot? What if it's the Toronto Maple Leafs? What if it's the Montreal Canadiens? So I think those what ifs and the fact that it was a placeholder team that opens up so many different scenarios that could end up being negative for Senators fans kind of impacted the excitement of getting two top five picks in a really deep, incredible draft. But I think, 72 hours later, people are starting, I mean, there's still that disappointment, but I think fans obviously realize that what's available to them at number three and number five are going to be two elite high-end players that are going to help turn the rebuild around for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things where going into this season, if you had told Sens fans, all right, you're going to have 3 and 5 in this draft, people would be wondering what happened in San Jose, and then the wheels completely fell off there. But yeah, I mean, this overall, I think coming out of whenever that draft is going to be, this is probably a huge, huge moment for the Ottawa Senators rebuild.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, what's available to the Senators at number 3 and 5 are two really great players. And especially if you just look over the last couple of years, some of the players that have gone in the top five in the draft, I mean, they're going to get two really high impact players. I think, at number three, they're either going to get the option to draft Tim Stützle or Quentin Byfield, both of whom could be number one centers for the Ottawa Senators, which is one of the biggest pieces that they need to really right the ship. They have a lot of center depth. They have a good cupboard filled of center prospects, but most of them kind of top out at a second or third line center. So they're still really lacking that no doubt play driving top line center. And so at that number three pick, they're going to have the opportunity to grab that player, which is going to be huge for the Senators. And then at number five, they have the opportunity, if they feel they need more defense depth, they can go for a Jamie Drysdale. But in my opinion, the second biggest need is just more elite offensive wingers. So the Senators have the opportunity to grab a player like Lucas Raymond. In my opinion, I'm pretty high on Cole Perfetti and just seeing what he's been able to do at the OHL level in the last 2 years. His scoring numbers in his first year as a 16-year-old are among the likes of John Tavares and Taylor Hall, which is pretty good company to be in as a 16-year-old in the Ontario Hockey League. So they have the opportunity to grab a potential first line center and a potential first line winger. And both of those players could end up, rocketing up to number one and two on the depth charts of that whole organization. So that's certainly game changing for the rebuild. And then when you consider that the Senators potentially have another first round pick that's going to fall as high as 13, and I think a low as 15 to 18, depending on what happens with the Islanders in the qualifying round. They could get a Jack Quinn. They could get Yaroslav Askarov. And I mean, if they could get two elite forwards and then one of the best goalies in recent years, according to some prospect analysts, that's just going to be a home run draft for the Senators.
Yeah, that actually sounds pretty exciting from a Senators fan standpoint, for sure. When you put it that way. Chatting with Haley Salvian from The Athletic here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Peter Klein. He's Logan Gordon.
Hey, Haley, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You talk about a potential number one center probably being the focus for Senators, for the Sens draft team coming in at three. Would it really be between Quentin Byfield and Stutzel at that number three spot, do you think?
I think so. Now, my colleague Scott Wheeler, he's pretty high on Marco Rossi. So I think in some of his draft boards and some of his scenarios, he's actually floated the idea of if Byfield is indeed gone in the number two spot, which there has been some debate between who's going to go two or three, especially because the LA Kings have that second pick. So I think the conversation changes. I mean, if Byfield's gone at two and you have the opportunity to go Stützle, who has played center, but he played wing this year in the top German league. There have been some questions with certain scouts or certain prospect analysts if Stützle is going to be a 100% center in the National Hockey League. So where my colleague Scott's come in is saying Marco Rossi is going to be a center no matter what in the National Hockey League. So if he's the Senators and you want to make sure that you have a 100% going to be a center, maybe you go off board, quote unquote, off board a little bit and grab Marco Rossi in that number three spot. In my opinion, I think Stützle has the skill set, the playmaking ability, the skating, the ability, he has the speed, the hands to be a center in the National Hockey League. So, yeah, for me, I think the big debate right now is between Stützle and Byfield. And it's kind of a win-win situation for the Senators. If Stützle ends up going number two, then you get Byfield at three. And if Byfield goes two, then you get Stützle at three. I just don't think you can lose with either of those players. But certainly there's going to be an interesting conversation around, is Stützle going to be a center for sure? And if he's not, then maybe do you go with a Marco Rossi kind of player? I think it's kind of the debate for the most part between the first two that you mentioned, but Rossi can certainly put his name in that conversation as well.
Pierre Dorion made some interesting comments Friday following the draft lottery, saying that he felt that though these players could play as soon as next year and that the fan base could be very excited about that. As someone who covers the team, is that a bit of a painting it with rose-colored glasses for the fan base? I feel like it's not unusual for players to jump in right away to the NHL, but it's a very big ask of you know, two potential top five picks to be making an impact on the team next season. Is Dorion kind of deflecting a bit from the fact that they didn't get first overall with that comment, or do you think he really believes that one or even both of these players could be on their roster next year?
Yeah, no, I honestly, I think he really believes that one or both players could be on the roster. I think, you know, maybe once you get down to number five, I don't know if Cole Perfetti is quite ready to jump into the NHL right away, but I think there's an argument to be made that Quentin Byfield is ready for the NHL. And then I also think that some scouts think that Tim Stützle would get a long, hard look. I don't think everyone's convinced that Stützle would be ready next season, but I think he should at least get a long, hard look in training camp. I don't think it's really rose-colored glasses. I do think there is a potential for these players to be ready, but at the same time, there's a ton of complications just because of the way that the schedule is going to work with the NHL next season. If it starts in January, some of these players realistically are going to have their NHL debuts delayed by a year. You know, even players like Alexi Lafreniere, Marco Rossi, Tim Stützle. Stützle's already signed in Germany for another 2 years. I believe his contract's up in 2022. And I believe if the date is August 15th to sign a player to an NHL contract who's already committed to a European league, and they're not changing those dates. So if Stützle ends up staying in Germany, he's there for the whole season. So he's not going to be, even if he's technically NHL ready, he's not going to be able to play next year just because of, you know, some of these scheduling conflicts due to COVID-19. So I guess in saying that, maybe it is a big ask, and it's a big question mark if they're actually going to play next year, whether they're ready or not.
Just shifting the conversation a bit to some more news from last week. It was obviously a big one here in Calgary as we found out that one of the best players in Calgary Flames history, Jerome McGinley, was inducted to the Hall of Fame. But it was also news in Ottawa as Daniel Alfredsson was passed over once again. You had a great read on it. on The Athletic about Alfredson being passed over again. What was the feeling in Ottawa as the, you know, probably the most important person that I can think of in Sens history gets passed up again by the Hall of Fame committee? And what do you think his chances are moving forward to potentially find his spot in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, well, I think the reaction among the fans in Ottawa was they were really frustrated. I don't know if devastated is too much hyperbole, but I think if you ask anyone in Ottawa, there's nobody more important to that fan base than Daniel Alfredson. And most Senators fans truly believe that he should have been inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, maybe not in his first year of eligibility, but certainly second, third, and fourth year, just because of the resume that he's built up. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame, not just the NHL Hall of Fame. And Daniel Alfredson has an incredible international resume. He played in 5 Olympics, almost 100 games. I believe it was around 88 to 90 games for the Swedish national team at the Olympics, at World Championships, at any international tournament, which is around the same that Matt Sundin had. I'm not even going to get into that Matt Sundin, Daniel Alfredson argument, because that opens up a whole different can of worms. But and then he's the franchise leader in goals, points, assists for the Senators. And if you do a time adjustment ratio for any of the players on the all-time list, Alfredson goes from 54th overall in points to around 33rd when you adjust the time that he played in the NHL. So there's only one player who's eligible for the Hockey Hall of Fame on that list that's not in, other than Daniel Alfredson. So certainly there's so many reasons why they believe that he should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame, but obviously there's something that's just not getting through to the selection committee, whether it's a lack of respect for him being an elite player. He certainly doesn't have people going to bat for him. He doesn't have big name players vocally going to bat for him from the organization. And that's something that the former president, Cyril Leader, has voiced, that people aren't vocalizing the fact that Daniel Alfredson should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So that certainly plays a role as well. So I don't know what it is. And I just think as more players end up being eligible for the Hockey Hall of Fame, it's going to get even more difficult for Alfredson to get in. At this point, it's just starting to look like you're going to have to wait for, you know, a really quiet light year for him to get inducted, because you're going to get the Sedins, who people could argue for and against being first ballot Hall of Famers. Henrik Zetterberg is eligible next year as well. Jaromir Jagr and Pavel Datsyuk are going to retire eventually. I think they were still under contract and playing last year, but they're going to be eligible eventually. And that list of first balloters is going to start to grow. And so is the pool of people who've been looked over for a number of years. So is he going to get lost in that big pool of people waiting? Or is he going to get in soon? I don't know. It's not looking like it's going to happen, at least in the next year or two, even though it probably should.
Yeah, and just to that point, do you think that something like importance to a franchise, NHL, you know, speaking in NHL terms, is something that kind of gets overlooked by the selection committee? Because I can't think of a player more associated with a franchise than Alfredson and Ottawa. Like, that's the automatic connection I make is between those two players. And to me, it would seem that someone that's, you know, such a long-term member of that team and had such an impact on that franchise would be something that would be coveted by the Hockey Hall of Fame, but seemingly isn't. Do you kind of share that same sentiment?
Yeah, I think so. I think when we did a mock Hall of Fame draft, and one of the things that was said, like, we had our own shadow committee. There was a bunch of us writers who did it. There was 18 of us, and we kind of went through mimicking the exact process that the Hockey Hall of Fame would go through. And one of the things that somebody said when I nominated Daniel Alfredson was that they associate Alfredson to the Senators the way that Calgary Flames fans associated Jerome Iginla to the Calgary Flames. Same thing with a guy like Vinny Lecavalier. He's greatly associated with the Tampa Bay Lightning, but obviously only Jerome got into the Hockey Hall of Fame this year. So it's an interesting question, and it's one, I mean, I don't have the answer to that right now, because obviously Jerome has so many other things on his resume, but he was a guy who was so closely associated to the franchise and so important to Calgary, right? So you would think that that would maybe be mimicked with Alfie, and I don't know if it's the lack of Stanley Cups. Maybe it's the fact that he's in Ottawa, which is arguably the smallest Canadian market in the NHL. I really don't know what it is that's not getting him in.
Sorry, mute my mic. Chatting with Haley Salvian here on Sportsnet 960 Fan. Just a couple more with you. As you mentioned before, and just going through it while you and Logan were chatting, I believe here by my count, potentially 7 picks in the first 2 rounds of the draft for the Ottawa Senators, depending on how the ping pong balls go with the New York Islanders. But what else is on the offseason checklist for the Senators? Seeing a lot of contracts up, either UFA or RFA, well, what's toward the top of the checklist for the Ottawa Senators?
Yeah, well, definitely they have a lot of UFAs and RFAs that they need to kind of decide on. You know, certainly there's some interest with a lot of their forwards. Anthony Duclair's an RFA, Connor Brown's an RFA, so is Chris Tierney, Nick Paul. You have some of your prospects who are up for new contracts, and goalies like Joey Decord and Rudolph Spalters. Like, there is so much to be done this summer, so I guess it's kind of nice maybe that it's going to be a really long off season for the Senators, because they're going to have a lot of time to get everything done. But I would say that the top of the list for me personally is getting a player like Connor Brown under a long-term contract, maybe not as long as a 7-year deal, but I think certainly something around 4 or 5 years for Connor Brown. He's shown that he can be a really reliable two-way player, a really nice veteran addition who could probably wear the A for the Senators for quite a few years. He's a really important piece to this puzzle, in my opinion. He's a good leader. He's a good guy. He likes playing in Ottawa. He has a good relationship with DJ Smith. So I'd argue he's the most important RFA to get locked in for a semi-long-term contract. After Connor Brown, I'd say getting Anthony Duclair to a shorter-term deal is going to be important. You don't want to lock him in for too long after only one season of success in Ottawa. You want to just maybe give him a 1 or 2 year deal, see if he can replicate another 20 plus goal season. And then if it works and you want him longer, then you can extend him again, if that's an option. I also think trying to get Brady Tkachuk under a long-term deal early is going to be really important, especially for that building trust with the fan base aspect. Brady still does have one more year of his entry-level contract, but as soon as free agency opens, whenever that is, they will be allowed to negotiate a second deal with him. And we saw the Senators negotiate a new deal for Thomas Chabot, and they signed him to a new contract at the start of this year, which was the final year of his entry-level contract. So I think it's probably one of the biggest priorities for the Senators to try to replicate something like that with Brady Tkachuk. He's a fan favorite. He's already the face of the franchise. He could be the potential captain of this hockey team. So I think locking in Brady Tkachuk is arguably, you could put that over getting Connor Brown under contract, but obviously they have at least another year to do that work with Brady. I would say those are kind of my three pillars to an important offseason for the Senators.
And at the helm of all of that would be Pierre Dorion. And for an Ottawa Senators team that is in a rebuild, it's easy to poke holes in a job that someone has done. But you look at some of the assets they've acquired. We talk about the draft capital. You talk about some of the young, exciting players there. What do you think of the job that Pierre Dorion has done so far?
Yeah, I know, like you said, certainly everyone's always going to look to poke holes on certain things. And I know the knee-jerk reaction for a lot of the moves that were made by Pierre Dorion were quite negative, especially ones who were, you know, really beloved players in the franchise. But when you just look at the return for everything and how that's turning out right now, I mean, if he didn't get that conditional first-round pick in the Erik Karlsson trade, the Senators would be coming out of the draft lottery with only the number 5 overall pick, which would be much more devastating than getting the 3rd and 5. I'm not saying that it's all worth it to trade Karlsson by any means. He was the face of the franchise and a huge fan favorite. But, you know, Dorion has done a great job assembling and quite frankly, stockpiling these picks. And he said they did it specifically for the 2020 draft because they knew how deep of a draft it was. It's not an accident that they have 3 first-round picks in 2020 and the most deep draft in recent years. That was on purpose because they knew what was coming through the pipeline this year. And then if you just look at his track record, at the draft, especially in later rounds, I mean, a lot of people weren't happy with the Senators picking Shane Pinto. Forgive me if I'm a little off, but I believe he was 32nd overall, and there was players like Bobby Brink and Arthur Kaliev available. And everyone's like, who's Shane Pinto? Why are we grabbing this guy? And lo and behold, he's the leading scorer at University of North Dakota, the number one team in the NCAA last year, and he's winning the Rookie of the Year award. And all of a sudden, that pick's looking pretty good. You know, he also grabbed guys like Alex Formanton in the late rounds, players like Jacob Bernard Docker. He grabbed Lassie Thompson in the first round last year. There's so many examples of Pierre Dorion doing such a great job scouting and picking these players in the draft. I mean, I think he's doing a fine job, if you ask me, with turning this rebuild and, you know, doing his quote-unquote rebuilding plan that he likes to speak to.
Haley, just two more for you from me. First one, as we get closer to the NHL restart plan here, we know the Sens aren't going to be a part of that, and we could be looking at an unprecedented amount of time for them to not be together as a team. Has anyone in the organization spoken about that, or do we know if the team's going to try to plan something ahead in the future to get their players back on the ice or back together in some form or another so they don't go such a long time in between playing competitive hockey?
Yeah, I know that's something that has been spoken about. I know Pierre Dorion did an end of season kind of media Zoom conference, such as the new norm now. And yeah, it's going to be a really long off season for the Senators, and it's going to be really difficult to try to see if they can get back on the ice. Obviously, they're not going to be a part of phase three, which is training camps, because they're not returning to play. So it's possible that if the season doesn't begin until November, December, or even January, that would be 9.5 months between NHL games played for the Senators. So Dorion said on the press conference, you know, he said the 24 teams who are returning, they're going to obviously have a chance to return to play, and that's going to be an advantage for those teams over the bottom seven who aren't going to get to return. And he said that they want to try to find a plausible solution that's going to make sure that those bottom seven teams aren't starting next season so far behind because they haven't played in so long. One idea that has come up with some teams, you know, not from Dorion specifically, but some teams have talked about the potential for little mini camps for the non-playoff teams in the summer, little mini training camps or little rookie tournaments, little things that they can just add into the calendar. But the issue there is the NHL and the NHLPA would need to essentially renegotiate terms for that, because as per the CBA, off-season's off-season, and everything needs to be voluntary. Nothing is allowed to be mandated during the off-season. So that would take kind of a renegotiation of those terms to allow a team to have a mandatory training camp. So, I mean, if they do something, they could make it voluntary, but then you don't know how many players are going to pack up and come to Ottawa for a mini training camp rather than just train with their groups that they already have. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, and maybe that will come up in CBA negotiations. But that's certainly going to be the one big talking point in this next 8 to 9 months, is if the Senators are actually going to get to come together as a team before the winter, essentially.
And my last one for you here, Bobby Ryan, a feel-good story for the Sens as the season was just about to come to an end that nobody really saw coming. He's up for the Masterton Trophy here, and we're all hoping that when things come back in action, he's a member of the Senators. What would it mean for him to win the Masterton and to just kind of, you know, gotten his life and his hockey career back and moving forward? How would that feel for him and the rest of his teammates going forward?
Yeah, well, certainly for Bobby, the Bill Masterton nomination, he said, was a silver lining in what's been a really difficult year for him, both on and off the ice. The year started quite difficult for him. He scored one goal in the first game, went scoreless for another 16. He ended up being a healthy scratch for only the second time in his career for performance-related issues. So he was kind of struggling on the ice, and obviously we all found out after the fact the reasons why he went into the NHLPA player assistance program, and he left the team for so long. So it's certainly been a really difficult year for Bobby Ryan, who is just such a wonderful, wonderful person to have in a locker room and personally for me to interact with every day. I think any media member in Ottawa or anyone who's interacted with Bobby would stay the same. So for him, I think the nomination in itself, not even just winning, he said it was a positive light after a really difficult year. And we spoke to Bobby when we made the nomination for him, and he said it was just such a big honor to be able to represent his team in a positive light after some of the, what he called negative things that, you know, kind of were in the media this year in him going to the program. So I think it would mean a lot to Bobby. I really think he's truly deserving. He went through so much this year, and that's what the Bill Masterton's all about. It's the ultimate comeback award, and being in the press box and watching his comeback game was probably one of the most special things that I've ever been in an NHL building for. And I mean, I've been to playoff games as a fan, and I've seen some pretty cool stuff, but I don't know if anything's going to hold a candle to Bobby Ryan's return.
Haley, this was awesome. Thank you for doing this today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me.